Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a chilly 44 degrees and cloudy and still kind of damp here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI, Eye in the Sky, Surveillance, 21st Century Cures, and DARPA BTO. And, you know, we've been looking for a long time now at this mental health surveillance section 399S in the 21st Century Cures Act and some of the stuff that's been going on with Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Health, moving over to Google with their fascination with mental health. Some of these new tools of being able to diagnose not only emotion, but mental disorders from just the sound of your voice. I could do physical disorders too. So this 21st Century Cures Act is playing out in the real world now. We have Dr. Smartphone, and it's all about bringing healthcare to Africa with the Hoochie phone. Don't worry about it because we have this big crisis in healthcare right now. Healthcare is too expensive and nobody can afford it. And we might dump millions of people off of whatever plan's been out there and tell them to go figure it out for themselves. Well, guess what, people? We are going to have 21st Century Cures be the answer, and it's going to be digitized. And it's going to be a Fitbit. We're seeing Fitbits and the Panopticon rolling out already through health insurance plans. Even if you want to get free insurance, I think that's going to be the way they sell it to reduce costs, because that's what they always do. Better, faster, cheaper. Well, being able to administer your health care through some sort of remote management capability. It's going to be what happens. That's how it happens in the rest of the world for networks and anything like that. Got to have some sort of remote access and be able to monitor it in a dashboard. Well, you will be no different. So we had looked at, as part of this mental health thing, Google is now rolling out this AI in the sky to protect us from violent imagery online. This is this Google's Cloud Vision API. Late last night, I was actually reading a National Institute of Health study that I may have put into the notes one show this week when we had talked about desensitization to violence. There was a National Institute of Health study, and actually there's a whole bunch of them, but this whole debate about whether or not violent video games cause desensitization to violence has been going on since the 90s. I mean, I remember when the argument first started, and like I had mentioned yesterday, I was always on the other side of this argument going, no, 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 there's no way that it can cause you to have feelings like if it were real. But I'm telling you, as things have gotten better, as graphics have gotten more amazing, and honestly, in playing those games and then seeing the effects of those games on people, on friends, seeing just screen behavior and the dopamine dangling carrot without violence in it, seeing what that does to children, I have quite changed my stance on that. But I've also mentioned, you know, what about TV? What about movies? We're going to have Google scanning the interwebs to decide whether or not an image is violent, whether or not it contains a gun. Oh, no. Close your eyes there, Johnny. We got to remove it. Delete. You know, but what about like our everyday news? What about the movies that Hollywood spends millions of dollars in special effects to make grand explosions? Are those not going to be allowed anymore? Well, there was a National Institute of Health study. This one's from 2015, so it's pretty recent. Emotional and physiological desensitization to real life and movie violence. Now, one of the things that they did find that there were lots of studies that showed, yes, watching violent video games has had a lot of research behind it. And yes, it seems to give you lower empathy after you've been shooting pregnant women and stealing cars for, 10 years in Grand Theft Auto, shooting people with nail guns and whatever. It seems that you don't seem to have the same sort of reaction as humans who have never been exposed to that stuff. And they start seeing these violent images and their blood pressure goes up and they get into this flight and fight or flight fear mode. They start to feel afraid. They start to feel compassion for what they're seeing unfold in front of their eyes, but not the kids who were fully immersed in games. But what they haven't done a lot of studies on, and I couldn't even believe it, but I guess I could, this article mentioned over and over again that there just is not enough evidence or research, sorry, not evidence, not enough research that's ever been done about the reaction humans have to real life and movie violence. Are you kidding me? So you've never studied that at all, so you don't know. You've been pumping movie violence. I mean, we were just talking about how, like, back when we were kids, violence on TV wasn't too common. And if it was at night. It was after kiddies' bedtime. Well, today we can go 24/7. We got hundreds, if not thousands, of channels and all these different outlets now to get movies and TV shows and whatever. Because everybody's streaming. So it's on demand. We could get anything. There's no rated G or R or X anymore. I mean, it's just all out there. Anything on the internet is free to download. Unless, of course, you're on YouTube and it's age restricted. But most sites don't even have that. But they've done no research, almost zero to none, on the emotional reactivity to violence in real life and in movies on humans. Now, I mean, we know what happens. And actually, that came up on an interesting theory here that if someone had been exposed to intermittent violence, let's say, as a child, and then it was over, that child will still hold their empathy. That child might even have greater empathy. But if a child grows up in a very violent environment, let's say in the first case, maybe you had a dad that yelled a lot, or maybe your parents fought a lot, but it was only for little blurbs, a couple hours after work, he'd yell, bah, 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 and then he'd eat and go to bed. But let's say in the other case, you were a child that grew up somewhere where they had lots of gangs. You were down in LA or, I don't know. I mean, there's gangs everywhere, down at the Mexican border, New York City, Chicago. You got gangs everywhere, and you're in the inner cities. Hey, if you grow up, this is what the study's saying, but it makes sense. If you grow up in a situation where you're surrounded by violence and violent people and violent behavior all the time, it becomes ingrained into your upbringing, it becomes ingrained into your imprinting. And you start to mimic that behavior. And yes, that does make sense. So let's take that now to video games. So I guess the question is with video games, because it pushes that dopamine button, beep, beep, beep. And I don't know if they've even investigated since they haven't even investigated movies or whatever. But maybe it's the video games push that dopamine button, which accelerates the imprinting. This would be my educated guess. And if you do it on a habitual basis, like every day at 6 for 5 hours, well, Johnny, I think you're going to have some issues. I mean, if it's just an occasional thing where you go to Nana's house and whip out the Xbox or something and play for an hour or two against Grandpa, I don't think that's going to affect you. But anyway, it was just interesting to find out. And I was very long-winded to tell you not much of anything. But it's very interesting for me, at least, to find out, since I've been following this argument for 20 plus odd years about whether or not video game violence causes a lack of empathy, a only to find out that they have never even really studied real life violence or movie violence and what that does to humans either, but they have studied the video game. And by the way, the end result of the study on the video game is, yes, it does cause a lack of empathy. But like I said, I think that it has to do with how often you play and how long you play and how habitual it is. But dopamine being an addiction button, I would have to imagine that most people that get sucked into video games, especially if they're like first-person shooters, which I did love my Quake, and I know what it feels like. We used to Friday nights... That's what we did. Hunt down monsters in the catacombs and kill them with nail guns. But, you know, I can see how easy it is. And as they use these tools, not only to suck you into the machine, but they are developing that dopamine button. Nice, big, and juicy. See? Bam, bam, bam. It's flashing now. And, of course, DARPA's done tons of research into the dopamine button and how it works and how they can manipulate that to utilize on the battlefield with soldiers. So we have Google with this Cloud Vision API that's going to keep us safe now from violent images, because there are those of us out there who, of course, they do not want to turn off the empathy. They want you to be timid as a titmouse. Just like that study was saying, that if you've only been exposed to it intermittently and you are not addicted to it because of the machine, you should still have empathy. And see, those are the people, those are the humanitarians, those are the people who care about what's happening. Those are the people that are looking over at what we're doing in the Middle East and going, hey, wait a minute, Charlie, I didn't give you my tax money to go kill women and children. Oh, starve them out and not to give two shits about anyone, to let refugees drown. You know, those are the people that are going to start questioning the machine. And then, you know, there are the others that feed on violence. And those will be the people that they utilize to their advantage. When things in the homeland are starting to get tippy and people are starting to get itchy and beat some drums. I don't know. I see a lot of that happening now. I mean, literally, it's like there's all these different sides and nobody's happy, but none of the sides get along and everybody's complaining. And I mean, if we were all standing on even on a nice little boat in the water, not a yacht, but I'd say a little boat, we're required balance. We would be in some pretty deep shit right now. We might even be in the water by this point. But it's getting a little tippy for sure. So we have Google wanting to remove these violent images online. And we have this march toward taking over surveilling mental health. Former director of the National Institute of Mental Health in charge. We also have Google, who wants to monitor your mental health as well. We read a story back from 2015 that was all about Tommy Incel. Not even, this is right after he just went to Google. Tommy Incel wanting to use mobile apps and voice that they can acquire to determine whether or not somebody is mentally ill on a spectrum. Now, why would they care about that? And why would they now have a neurological surveillance, a national neurological surveillance line item in the 21st Century Cures Act? And this is going to come down to bagging and tagging every single one of us. Well, here we go. I saw the story yesterday. Google kicks off. So Google's been busy. $100 million project in predictive medicine. Ding, ding. This is the Precision Medicine Initiative. And they are seeking, so this is outside of the All of Us program, they are seeking 10,000 volunteers for invasive screening. Yeah. Predictive medicine, or known as precision health, is a trend in healthcare that is growing exponentially. Perhaps the greatest indication to date. It's stated to be the future of disease prevention and patient care, And it is a massive new investment by tech behemoth and king of the algorithm, Google. Of course, there's lots of money in it. However, in order to continue along the path toward true predictive modeling, there will need to be a group of people willing to be tracked, ding ding, and monitored, ding ding, to a never before seen degree. And herein also lies some concern about what the future will look like if all of our most intimate functions are logged and analyzed for inspection by the central computers of Google and the healthcare state. People might not know it, but Google is not only synonymous with online browsing and search engines, it has a health division called Verily. We found out that health division Verily is also in some sort of partnership with GlaxoSmithKline, and I don't even remember what, I don't even think I kept it open. I even remember what on earth they were doing. It was some sort of mental health thing. GlaxoSmithKline and Google, they formed a brand new company. Don't ask me what it is, because I closed it. I'm just looking at my closed stuff. Yeah, I closed it yesterday. I'm too tired to find it. So look it up, you'll find it. Anyway, so people might not know it. Google's not only synonymous with online browsing and search engines, but also with a health division called Verily. It is a result of an undertaking that began in 2014 as Google Life Sciences, and has become one of the company's most intricate and far-reaching endeavors, none more so than the specific mission of predicting future illness. And ding-a-ling, this is going to keep the cost of healthcare down, is my prediction. Let's do predictive analysis, just like we were talking the other day with predictive policing. Let's do predictive analysis of illness, Jenny, and we'll be able to tell whether or not you're getting sick. You know what? Give us a little DNA swab too there. And we'll be able to determine, well, statistically speaking, of course, whether or not you have potential to get, oh, one of 122 diseases that we know how to scan for right now in your genome. Soon to be 179 for 20 extra dollars a month. This is where it's coming to. I am predicting in the not too distant future, and this really frightens me. This frightens me. They will be able to tell everything that's going into your body once they get monitors on you. We started reading about the neural butt dust Fitbits again yesterday, the DARPA Berkeley collaboration. And they were talking about how they can monitor all your nerves and zippity zap them, see if something's going wrong. But it gets even more invasive than that. Guys, we are just going to be another node on the network, and we will be getting upgrades at some point in the future. Remember, Crystal talked about uploading and downloading, and I just saw some really new stuff in one of my email dumps that I get on a daily basis about uploading yourself. I don't know, they've been experimenting. So I don't have that up either. It's too early, guys. This is too much. All right, so let's see, where do we leave off? Google Life Sciences has become one of the company's most intricate and far-reaching endeavors, and none more so than the specific mission to predict future illnesses. And that is the name of the game. Verily's bold mission has now been given a name. It is called Project Baseline. And see, I told you that baseline is very important in so many ways and so many things. Because right now, what they're doing is getting an average. And for all this stuff, even for our behavioral analytics, for our voice speech patterns, for our gait, for all these surveillance technologies that the Google AI eye in the sky is keeping its eye on. They got to get a baseline, because without a baseline, there's nothing to measure it against. So once they've figured out what your quote-unquote norm is, and maybe it doesn't even have to be your norm, maybe it has to be just the general norm of humans. And if you go outside of that norm, we've talked about it before, Johnny, you are operating outside of perimeters. Dispatch the drone. He needs to be medicated. going to come to that. And every time we feed data to this machine, they're baselining us more and more. So you better believe it. That good old Watson there. Good old Watson. Probably graduated a couple times by now, Mr. Smarty Pants Robot. A couple different degrees. I'd be afraid of Watson. You know, I was really kind of at one side of the fence. One half of my mouth was smiling when I saw that IBM didn't make its mark financially this last reporting season. But on the other hand, then I was thinking that with IBM not making their numbers, they weren't in the limelight, people will stop paying attention, then they can slide the slippery tentacles in a few more back doors and then come back in the front of the line as Watson learns a few more high-end skills that'll take all the jobs. So, you know, don't, but I would be afraid of Watson for sure. As well as Google with its dueling AIs now, learning without human intervention. I mean, guys, we really are getting to a point now. There are so many different competing artificial intelligences that are out there. I saw China, Beidou, and, oh, I don't remember the name of the other company. There was a whole gamut of news out of China last night when I was going through my different email feeds. And they are about ready to pull ahead. We should be afraid of China. They just moved. There was one Chinese company called WeChat, I think, which I have no idea what they actually do, but I've read about them a few different times. And they just moved to headquarters to Seattle, I think. There was another company, maybe it was Beidou, that was like turning up the heat on their AI. And Google is really starting to freak out about it because these Chinese companies are moving into our own turf, you know, Silicon Valley, United States, and they're coming from China. How can we allow this? And, you know, it makes you wonder, as these Chinese companies come here and start employing Americans, you know, they'll start hiring some of the best and the brightest and trying to sprinkle dangling carrots to get some of the smarty pants from like Google and DARPA and Toyota. Remember Toyota opened that big billion-dollar AI plant right up there with Gil Pratt running it from DARPA. You know, they got all this talent up there. So it's a wonder that a Chinese company with high aspirations in AI would open a place there. They want to have access to that talent, and they want to be able to steal secrets if they gain somebody like that, you know. So I just was thinking to myself, all this time we've been talking about this 21st century world war, I don't think it's going to be played with bombs, guys. I really don't think it's going to be played with bombs. It's going to be played with technology and with energy weaponry. It's going to be artificial intelligence and being able to enslave as many citizens as you can and get them surveilled and then be able to sell their data or monetize them in some which way. And that's how we're going to finance that universal basic income. We are going to be the product. And everything we interact with is going to be the moneymaker. It's just so amazing how this is happening. So, Project Baseline. This is Verily's bold mission. Preliminary estimates put the price tag of this project near $100 million. But the ramp up in predictive medicine, so this is going to be marrying AI with medicine and Google's own home-baked initiative, is demonstrable in everything from consumer wearable electronics, like your Fitbit, with the simple monitoring capabilities, right up to smartphone apps that have been developed to connect doctors to patients with a history of depression. And, oh, what's his name? Jason Erickson wrote this story, hate to tell you, but it gets way more invasive than connecting doctors with patients with depression. How about the African hoochie cam? And there are more coming. I saw one the other day where they have been able now to do something where they specially engineer some pancreatic cells that produce insulin. They can implant them back in the mice, and then you can watch real time on your smartphone what your sugar levels are, and you could literally dial up or dial down your sugar. on a smartphone and have the cells that they implanted inside of the rat either produce or stop producing insulin, like a direct remote control from your smartphone for insulin production inside of a living organism. Okay, so that's where we are headed, people. And I mean, put on a seatbelt because you haven't seen half of what is coming yet. This ramp up to predictive medicine initiatives is demonstrable in everything from consumer wearables with simple monitoring capabilities right up until smartphone apps that have been developed to connect doctors to patients with a history of depression. And while many people seem to be on board with employing technology as an elective measure to better their overall physical and mental fitness, one should understand that this is the merger of healthcare and the insurance company. Yeah, and we got to watch out for them. Where the slippery slope might be found, and even worse than that, for them to decide whether or not we're even worth keeping around because it would cost too much. With our health problems that are maybe genetically passed down, maybe your whole line needs to be ended there. Johnny, you guys are defective. You and all your ancestors. And as stated by the publication Managed Care in their article, more data in healthcare will enable predictive modeling advances. Hey, if anyone's looking for an investment, invest in the end of the human race and in precision medicine initiatives. It's going to make bazillions. Predictive modeling has grown to be a linchpin of care management, healthcare plans, integrated delivery systems, and other healthcare organizations increasingly channel their patients to interventions based on part of what they deduce from predictive models that have been traditionally run against databases of administrative claims. So I don't know, you're 40 and you're a non-smoker, but you don't exercise there, Johnny. So you should probably go get this preventative exam because our computers say, statistically speaking, of course, you have potential problems because of your lack of exercise, and we just want to keep an eye on it, Johnny. This way they've done it in the past. But there hasn't ever been much of the way of follow-up. I've gotten a few letters like that, like, hey, we see that you're, turning such and such an age. It's time for you to go. Because, statistically speaking, it says that you should go. But I think in the next few years, we're all going to become pincushions and then to send the self-driving cars to come pick us up. There will be no saying no. Or your robot nurse is going to show up. She's going to tell you it's not going to hurt a bit. I don't know. Do we want to keep reading this? This is kind of long. So most day-to-day monitoring will be done via wristwatch. So there's your Fitbit. But volunteers' homes also will need to be retrofitted. Remember we talked about that smart toilet? Smart toilets go a long way to accommodate additional testing, including mattress sensors. Oh, no. Mattress center sensors. And a special router that will record your sleep behavior and transmit the information to scientists. It is a massive undertaking that is amplified by the fact that not all the 10,000 people are expected to sign up at the same time. So the company is estimating at least a 10-year timeline for the study to be completed. Moreover, there could be a level of non-cooperation or even full dropout over time. According to MIT Technology Review, Verily needs 10,000 Americans, so step right up, who will volunteer and submit to a battery of real-time testing over a 4-year period. They will perform X-rays and heart scans, in addition to having their genomes deciphered and their blood tested in so-called liquid biopsies. And this is some of that new on-the-fly diagnostic testing that DARPA's been funding. I also want to do some molecular testing, and maybe that's what some of those new, oh, I don't remember what they're called, millimeter wave scanners. Those are your molecular scanners, including DNA sequencing for each participant. The study calls for Google collecting the volunteer's stool So you gotta poop for Google, saliva, spit for Google, and even your tears. So cry for Google to get into the database. Look, how frightening is this? And I will guarantee you that 10,000 people are gonna step right up. You know, they're thinking it's gonna be all phased in here, and some people are gonna, it's gonna take 10 years to sign up. I don't think so. All these people crying, they're gonna wanna be a part of the machine. They're thinking that they're doing something good. And look, it's Google, Mom. I'm gonna have Google healthcare. That's nuts. MIT stated that they have not yet been given a consent form to review, but they do highlight some key issues that appear on the project's website pre-application, which have already plagued all areas of technology, namely how to secure that information that's collected. Yeah, good question. And will it be shared or even sold to third parties? And that's something that we're finding across the board. Even the most innocuous information that we're being asked to give. We read about that one healthcare plan that company was running, and everyone, you either got a discount on your health insurance when you wore the Fitbit or it got jacked up. And every time you use the snack machine, you had to use either your individualistic PIN code or your biometric fingerprints. And third-party companies were getting all that data as to what you were eating and how much you were walking and how much you were exercising. They were also talking about badges, having GPS location, and microphones. They could hear what you were talking about with other people. I mean, how nutty is this? Now we have Google. Google totally not only wants in on your mental health, but now they are talking about total end-to-end healthcare. They want tears, they want saliva, and they want poop. I mean, you can't get more invasive than that. And this is just the beginning. Just remember that, guys. This is, we are seeing the future of humanity here. The way that Microsoft kind of slid their slippery palms into the back end of 90% of the world's desktop is the same way that Google is now sliding their way into the human operating system. See? And they want to get themselves integrated with the help of DARPA. Remember, I told you the unholy trinity, Google, DARPA, Kurzweil. That's it. I'm telling you, I knew it the second I saw it. The second Kurzweil got hired and then Regina Duggan, and they started sliding all these people over there from DARPA. It was just like bells started ringing. That is the group that is doing this. They are all working together. And this is using this, keeping you healthy and keeping you safe to make you a node on the network. And it's gonna happen. And it's gonna be forced, quote unquote, voluntary. Anyway, how secure is the information that is collected? Will it be sold to third parties? Well, who the hell knows? But everybody's gonna make money. And they're going to be able to keep tabs on all of you as they give you your universal basic income. See, this is coming right about the time when the robots are going to take all the jobs. And, you know, you're going to get unruly if you have nothing to do. But if they can keep you monitored, they can know your location at all times. They can tell what you are thinking. And they know when you are sleeping. They know when you're awake. They know if you've been bad or good. And here's the thing, it's gonna be Google. And if anyone remembers last year or the year before, Google had that Christmas card with Big Dog, the DARPA Boston Dynamics robot pulling a sleigh. And that's exactly what it's gonna be. They are gonna know everything. And they'll be able to bzz, 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 and turn you on or off. They'll be able to control those brain chemicals and tune you down a notch or two with your little frequency emitter. Style Johnny down to 10 hertz. I'm gonna turn them down. Take a nap, Johnny. And that's what's gonna happen, guys. This is the end result of all of this. So don't think that it's all for making sure that Nana lives to a ripe 120 and it's gonna be a love out longevity medicine. No. Nana is going to become part of a study somewhere. They're going to learn how to fix things while using Nana as an example. So in the future, you know, it'll be all perfected. But in the meantime, When us plebes that are the real-time guinea pigs are being used for experimentation, it'll also give them the ability to keep us in check and dial us down so we don't get unruly. The good news is, for anyone alarmed by the direction that the Google-directed healthcare could take, people like Jewel, is that we are clearly, clearly a decade or more from knowing how viable any of this will be for full integration in healthcare management. Yeah, but I don't think it's going to be that long. They're already messing around with all kinds of different things for smart healthcare. It is a ripe market. And with the 21st Century Cures Act being passed in December of 2016, they have gotten away, cleared from that pesky FDA to be able to start clinical trials before anything else. I don't think it's as slow as they are warning in here. However, the warnings about Google's intrusion into internet activity, including surveillance, advertising, manipulation. Remember we talked about them opening the microphone. They have rights to do that and to be able to advertise to you based upon what is being talked about in the room. Including surveillance, advertising, manipulation, and censorship. And of course, now they are censoring. We have them demonetizing people all across the alternative media movement, from videos to websites. I just saw an activist post, got some nasty letter from Google Ads saying, hey, guess what? We don't want you anymore because you don't conform to our standards of news. Across YouTube, any of the big YouTube channels are getting 100 plus videos demonetized at a time, going, hey, Charlie, you don't fit our terms of service. And they're going to keep whittling away at that. I've been hearing now that there are a number of broadcasting services out there, some of the different Podbean, let's say. That was Alan Odinson, Barbarian Lounge. I just saw a video with him yesterday. They supposedly, someone hacked his account or something and they shut it down. He's fully locked out and nobody can get in. I saw in Media Monarchy yesterday in the chat room, somebody there who must have been broadcasting said that they wouldn't even accept his money to renew for next month. So I'm wondering if places like Google Ad Services aren't pressuring them as well, saying, hey, get all this advertiser unfriendly content off your site, or guess what? We're not going to allow you to use our services. And see, these companies like Podbean or Mixlr or whatever, they don't care about who's providing them money. They don't have a stake in the game for alternative media. They're just all about, hey, you know, we just want people to talk and maybe talk about kitty cats and what you have for dinner, so it's not any type of controversy, and so we can keep getting our ad revenue. Google will love us. But see, Google's the one that's changing the whole show here. Google is running way more than what we even imagine. And there's another story here that I think we're going to hit next that makes, it's talking about making Google the world's most powerful entity. And they're getting to that point, guys. This should be frightening because Google and their AI and everything else that's going on. And now I saw there's even more stories talking about reshaping government and using AI to be assistive to lawmakers, because, you know, we just are such puny humans with our emotional decision-making process that we got to have some smart, super pulsating brain helping us make our decisions. But anyway, however, the warnings about Google's intrusion into internet activity, including surveillance, advertising, manipulation, and censorship, was similarly warned about in advance, and only now is becoming common knowledge about how much Google collects or tracks our interests. Yeah, well, if people would have just listened to me 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been a surprise. The introduction of similar algorithms to targeting our physical being leaves not a minute to waste if we wish to sound a warning about what will happen if Google succeeds with mapping human health. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. All right, well, Google is working on it. Here's an article, May 1st, 2017. Google's AI plan could make the company the world's most powerful entity. Oh, how much worse can it get? Well, using games to train and enable AI to learn is one thing. And remember, those games we found out is where they took two AIs and they let them compete against each other for resources. When resources were abundant, the artificial intelligences were pretty cool with each other and cooperative. But once the resources started to get scarce, they started attacking each other and they would even resort to killing. So look out, people, because even AI starts to get a little testy when it feels threatened. And yeah, that was the exact words. The AI became, quote unquote, aggressive. Using games to train and enable AI to learn is one thing. And applying that knowledge in the real world is a totally different matter. The important thing is for AI to be used for everyone's benefit. Right. Well, that's the mantra that they keep pushing out there, except that the crazy people in charge don't care about you. London-based brain technology company DeepMind was founded in 2010 and acquired by Google in 2014 for more than $500 million. Right now, DeepMind, and this is this whole project, the AI project, is over 400 research engineers and scientists, and more than 250 of them with PhDs, making this pool of human resources arguably the most formidable collection of scientific brain power focused on a single subject. AI. DeepMind is also a fusion of the best scientific thinking of academia with the speed and the focus of the best Silicon Valley startups. The company's mission involves a two-step process. First, they intend to solve intelligence. I don't think my intelligence needs solving. Thank you. They intend to solve intelligence by understanding natural intelligence and then recreating it artificially. Ding, ling, 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 ling. Like I said, that's what it's all about, recreating a human brain synthetically. Secondly, they intend to use AI to then solve everything else. And that's where we gotta be afraid. Be very afraid. As Demi Hazbizi, co-founder and CEO of Google DeepMind, explained in an article he wrote for the Financial Times, the approach that DeepMind takes focuses on, quote, learning and generality, like, cat pictures, and the objective of which is to develop the kind of AI that is needed for science. Yeah, because we don't have enough mad science. Don't worry about it. He says, if you want computers to discover new knowledge, then we must give them the ability to truly learn for themselves. To achieve their mission, they plan to build the world's first general purpose learning system, one that learns everything from data. He says that the algorithms they are working on learn from experience, acquiring knowledge based on some form of sensory, ding, 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 like robot googly eyes, rather than in abstract symbols. See, guys, you didn't realize why this was so important, but we really are seeing a paradigm shift here in how this whole AI evolution is rolling out. Before, they were just giving them characters and numbers and letting it crunch the math. But now they are physically, and we've done so many stories now on different robot sensors, biosensors that allow them to analyze their environment in much deeper ways than they could in the past. And they are growing by leaps and bounds. They can look at human faces and tell what you're thinking pretty much just by your micro expressions. And they could tell what you're probably going to do in the next 10 minutes just by watching the way you walk. I mean, it's frightening. And they're doing it from space, no less. And it's going to get even more invasive. Like Google gonna be your doctor. Dr. Smartphone, from every level, even down to your most intimate moments, by putting sensors in your bed. To achieve their mission, they are planning to build the world's first general purpose learning system, one that learns from data. But the algorithms are also working to learn from experience, acquiring knowledge based on some sort of sensory reality that rather than abstract symbols. They then require the learning to be general, meaning that the same system using the same parameters should be able to perform well across a diverse range of tasks, across different environments, and being able to transfer their knowledge from one domain to another. So if they learn to be, oh, I don't know, IBM Watson oncologist, they could become IBM Watson Ross the lawyer pretty easily and use all of his information that he learned about oncology to now apply toward winning lawsuits for medical malpractice in cancer treatment, let's say. I mean, that would be quite a good use of it. All right, comparing AI with the Hubble telescope, he asserts that AI is the ultimate tool to explore the universe, providing support to all kinds of experts and being able to identify patterns and sources that the human eyes cannot perceive on their own. And because for the well-informed, there is no doubt about AI's transformational potential in terms of changing everything about our world, and I am telling you upside down and shaking it to see if there's a quarter left in the pocket change, the company is well aware that they should use this human-replacing technology, quote-unquote, responsibly, ethically, and for everyone's benefit. So there you have it. Google, good old Google, doo-dee-doo-dee-doo. Google is gonna take over, doo-dee-doo-dee-doo. All right, well, I got so many stories here, and we're starting to run out of time, so I think we're just gonna keep going. So where else does that leave us? So we have Google. They decide that they're going to patrol the internet for violent images. They want in on your body, and they want your poop samples to be able to use you to start collecting data for their whole healthcare initiative. But Google also, with giving their robots AI eyes in the sky, we now have this cloud learning vision. Cloud vision learning, maybe that's what it's called, that Google is offering as an API to anyone who wants to integrate it into their applications. And the more you input, the smarter it gets. Well, where's that going to lead us? Well, you know what? Don't worry about it, because Google's going to protect us from violent images, and cloud and AI are also going to protect us from fake news, guys. I think so, because guess what? Yes, they had truth algorithms and all these other things, but cloud and AI are also reshaping news production. I'm going to do news with a quote-unquote finger quotation marks around it. Top technologists at places such as Al Jazeera, Sinclair, and Nexstar predict that the cloud will help producers break news more quickly, while artificial intelligence and big data will help them mine their archives for information, not just about news trends, but about how to shape stories for different audiences. So AI is going to groom a story for 10 different ways, for 10 different audiences if need be. And they are going to distribute to channels more appropriately for mobile, social, and whatever OTT is. I have no idea. Maybe that's a news term. The cloud and artificial intelligence and big data will play a much larger role over the next 5 years in how television organizations interpret, produce, and disseminate news, according to a panel of executives who spoke at a meeting of the Avid Customer Association in Las Vegas. At Al Jazeera, technologists are implementing a quote-unquote cloud-first strategy that will enable producers to get breaking news on the air more quickly by providing them access to the tools they need, no matter where they are. We want to be able to empower people to not necessarily have to even ever come into the office, says the network chief information and technology officer. Cloud strategy enables technologists to spin up resources or dial them back as they need it, and it enhances news sharing among Al Jazeera's 80 news-gathering bureaus around the world. For local broadcasters in the U.S., the cloud offers opportunities to offer personalized programming, says Senior VP and Chief Technology Officer at Sinclair Broadcasting, and that's where a lot of our local, I know our local Rochester News is done by Sinclair. In 5 years, we will be using the cloud to deliver content, he says. And as we move into ATSC 3.0, which I think is probably a new TV platform, because there used to be NTSC, that was the video platform, versus PAL, which is Europe versus US, which can target everyone over the air with individual content, we will have to be in that business. So personalization ad nauseum, people. And I bet you this has something to do with this violence detector that Google is talking about as well, where they can groom your feeds to your personalization. You won't be in that business having a server in your master control room playing out one channel anymore. Sinclair is currently looking at playing out its three digital subchannels, TBD, Charge, and Comet, from the cloud. And there are other projects we are working on that could play out of the cloud as well. We call it our training wheels. Learn as you grow. And if you don't take some steps now and take some risks operating out of your comfort zone, you are never going to learn anything, they said. The number of technology manufacturers, the number of station groups is starting to dwindle because of consolidation, so it is ever more important for companies to know where they are going and, of course, get bigger, leaner, and faster. For deployments, we need to make sure we are making good judgments, blah, blah, blah. In addition to analyzing its content with AI, Al Jazeera is also going to be using big data analytics to mine information that might be hidden in its archives of 20 years of news programming. Analysts look, for example, at how many times a politician uses certain phrases during speeches he made in a certain state, and then try to discern if that relates to a certain policy decision that he made in the future. The possibilities are endless. You have to digitize, then analyze. And that should be like the mantra of the month. That is what they're doing. Digitize so we can analyze. So, all right, brand new MIT Technology Review. We have talked about them being able to mimic voices and images before, and you can't even tell whether or not they are real. And some of those voice mimicking is from 1999, believe it or not. Well, real or fake, May 1st, 2017, AI is making it very hard to know. So put on a seatbelt, because you won't even know if you have real news people. You won't even know if the news and the lecture you are seeing is real. Thanks to machine learning, it is becoming easy to generate realistic video and to impersonate someone. Powerful machine learning techniques are making it increasingly easy to manipulate or generate realistic video and audio, and to impersonate anyone you want with amazing accuracy. A smartphone app called FaceApp, released recently by a company based in Russia, can automatically modify someone's face to add a smile, add or subtract years, or swap genders. The app can also apply beautifying effects that include smoothing out wrinkles and, more controversially, lightening of the skin. And last week, a company called Lyrebird, Lyrebird, which was spun out of the University of Montreal, demonstrated a technology that it says can be used to impersonate another person's voice. The company posted demonstration clips of Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton, all endorsing their technology. These are just two examples of how the most powerful AI algorithms can be used for generating content rather than just for simply analyzing data. Guys, if you really start looking at the picture that we are painting here, we are going to a bad, bad, bad place. We are going to be medicated, bagged, tagged, monitored by all the same big boys that then will be producing these applications that can rewrite news at any time on the fly with who knows if it's real or if it's Memorex, if it's them or if it's Photoshop. Who the hell knows? Powerful graphics, hardware, and software. It's like our reality is going to be rewritten right before our eyes. And powerful graphics, hardware, and software as well as new video capture technologies are also driving this trend. Last year, and this is the one we talked about, researchers at Stanford University demonstrated a face swapping program called Face to Face. And this is the one where you could sit in a one room and you could talk, and then on the screen it would be displaying like Barack Obama's face or George Bush's face saying exactly what your mouth was saying. This system can manipulate video footage so that the person's facial expressions match those of someone being tracked using a depth seeing camera, and the result is often eerily realistic. The ability to manipulate voices and faces so realistically could raise a number of issues, as the creators of Learbird acknowledge. Voice recordings are currently considered as strong pieces of evidence, ding, 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 in our societies, and in particular, in jurisdictions of many countries. Reads an ethics statement posted on the company's website. Our technology questions the validity of such evidence as it allows us to easily manipulate audio recordings. This could potentially have dangerous consequences, especially since we found out that they were doing this from a Washington Post article, that they were doing this since the 90s as part of an experiment, and nobody in the military decided they wanted it, so they gave it to Hollywood. So don't you tell me that there's any type of evidence if they get someone recorded saying anything, because it's not. Guys, it all can be faked. Both FaceApp and Learbird use deep generative convolutional networks to enable these tricks. This means that the company is applying a technique that has emerged in recent years in ways of getting algorithms to go beyond just learning, to classify and generate plausible data of their own. The machines are getting smarter. And you can train these networks to generate images from scratch that look almost like the real thing. And in the future, using these same techniques, it may become just a lot easier to manipulate everything, including video. It'll all become possible. And given the technologies that are now emerging, it may become increasingly difficult and important to be able to detect.
Listening to UCY.TV. Why don't you stick around for more awesome radio?